start with one tree, you'll plant many. That's the way it goes. Start with one tree, you'll plant many. That's how forests grow. Start with one tree, you'll plant many all over the world. When you give away the gift of life, it comes back sevenfold. Start with one smile, you'll see many. That's the way it goes. Start with one smile, you'll see many. That's how laughter grows. Start with one smile, you'll see many all over the world. When you give away the gift of life, it comes back sevenfold. And start with one song, you'll sing many. That's the way it goes. Start with one song, you'll sing many. That's how music grows. Start with one song and you'll sing many all over the world. When you give away the gift of life, it comes back sevenfold. Start with one hand, you'll hold many. That's the way it goes. Start with one hand, you'll hold many. That's how helping grows.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, April 20th, 2006. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up, city councilors are considering the first ever citywide ban on garden products containing phosphorus. More relatives of people who died in the 9/11 attacks will testify today on behalf of Zacharias Moussaoui. In Iraq, Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari may have his nomination withdrawn in order to break the stalemate over forming a government. Portland area weather today, sunny most of the day, cloudy, clouding over the afternoon, highs in the 60s and 70s, and highs in the 60s and low 70s. Tonight, cloudy chances of rain, temperatures in the 40s.
City councilors are contemplating the first ever citywide ban in Oregon on garden products containing the chemical phosphorus, which they say is fueling the growth of algae in Lake Oswego. The proposed ban targets fertilizers and other products used to maintain lawns and gardens. Phosphorus runs off lawns into the city's stormwater system, gets into the private lake, and ends up in the nation's third most polluted river, the Willamette. When asked why people who are forbidden to use the lake should be subject to the ban, Mayor Julie Hammerstad said, "This is a human action causing pollution and it can be altered. It's part of the stewardship of clean water." Other cities and states are contemplating their own bans. Minnesota has had a statewide ban on phosphorus in lawn care products since 2005. Lake Oswego officials haven't determined whether the ban should apply to the sale or the use of phosphorus in lawn care products within the city limits. Hammerstad acknowledged the restriction would be difficult to enforce because residents could go outside the city and buy lawn care products containing phosphorus. Phosphorus feeds Lake Oswego smelly algae blooms during the summer. In 2004, they led to a shutdown of the lake for 5 weeks.
Thanks largely to an improving economy, Portland Mayor Tom Potter rolled out a $2.8 billion budget this week. It's heavy in the kind of nuts and bolts, change government form from the inside details he loves. Under Potter's proposed 2006 through 2007 spending plan, Portland would spend 6% more than last year in an attempt to repair and preserve aging infrastructure, encourage community policing, and spur the city's rebounding business community. Potter's budget includes, as he previously promised, money to keep police precincts open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, answering a growing call from small business owners that they need help to stay competitive and stay in Portland, the mayor's budget includes several measures, including more money for downtown marketing. The Parks and Recreation Bureau is moving $412,000 from operations into maintenance. The Water Bureau, under Commissioner Randy Leonard, is making perhaps the biggest change. Potter wants to cut about 30% of what the Bureau spends a year on outside consultants. This from the Oregonian.
The City of Portland demanded yesterday that Portland City Council candidate Emily Boyles return $145,000 she's received in public campaign financing money and pay at least $10,000 in additional fines. After receiving a detailed accounting from Boyles of how she spent her money, auditor Gary Blackmer ruled that Boyles violated the public financing code by taking out a year's lease on her campaign headquarters. Candidates who qualify for taxpayer campaign help can only spend the money in the election for which they've qualified. In other words, Boyles should only have spent money she received for the primary in May. Instead, she rented a former Brazilian restaurant. In her report to the auditor, Boyles said she planned to use the space after the campaign for a food bank she runs. Blackmer received Boyles' documentation yesterday afternoon and ruled her ineligible for public money a few hours later. This from the Oregonian.
Two women with no teaching experience are vying to be Oregon's state superintendent of public instruction, according to the Salem Statesman Journal. One of them, Susan Castile, has political and media savvy and has been doing the job since 2003. She's been a cheerleader for the greater school spending in Oregon and a champion for closing the achievement gap between minority students and white students. Castile has backing from Oregon's major education interest groups and is considering a shoe-in to get reelected to another four-year term in Oregon's May 16th primary. Her lone challenger, Deb Andrews, is passionate about improving opportunities for gifted students and for boosting literacy via universal use of a phonics-based curriculum called direct instruction. Andrews is harshly critical of Oregon schools' reading instruction, teacher training, and standardized testing, but her anemic funding and support base are making it difficult to get her message out statewide.
The Oregon Renewable Energy Working Group will meet today in Salem to discuss renewable energy initiatives. The group is guiding implementation of the Governor's Renewable Energy Action Plan, which outlines a path to increase the use of renewable energy and alternative fuels. The agenda includes a presentation about community-scale renewable energy considerations. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Washington State sued more than a dozen tobacco companies yesterday. The state is joining several other states that are seeking $1.2 billion they say they are owed by cigarette makers under a landmark 1998 legal settlement. Attorney General Rob McKenna filed suit in King County Superior Court in Seattle seeking to collect the money from R.J. Reynolds and number three cigarette maker Lorillard Tobacco Company, who both withheld money from the annual payment of tobacco settlement funds that were due to the state on Monday. The suit also names Philip Morris USA and several other companies that are seeking to have the payments reduced. Attorneys general in California, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Ohio filed lawsuits yesterday, and Maine and Kentucky filed lawsuits Wednesday. Officials in New York and Connecticut have said they and other states would probably take similar steps. In all, 45 tobacco companies are involved in the settlement that Washington State Governor Chris Gregoire, then the state's attorney general, helped negotiate on behalf of 46 states. Those states settled their suit against the industry for $206 billion payable over 25 years. Four states settled separately for a total of $40 billion. The state's recovered costs for treating sick smokers.
Oregon's special legislative session begins today, and lawmakers are likely to close a $136 million human services budget gap with reserve funds and avoid cuts in health services for the needy. Governor Kulongoski called the special session to address the health services shortfall, and members of a special legislative panel voiced strong support for the no-cuts approach this week. Under the plan worked out by House and Senate leaders, the legislature will give $53 million directly to the Human Services Agency, and the Legislative Emergency Board will allocate another $83 million as the agency makes improvements in its financial and accounting processes.
More relatives of people who died on 9/11 are set to testify today on behalf of Zacharias Moussaoui. Those who testified yesterday said they didn't want to succumb to the feelings of revenge. Moussaoui's lawyers hope this testimony will counter the emotional impact of nearly four dozen witnesses who gave heartbreaking testimony for prosecutors about the impact of the attacks. Witnesses aren't allowed to give an opinion on whether Moussaoui should get the death penalty or life in prison, but the defense witnesses made their feelings clear. Marilyn Rosenthal's son died in the World Trade Center. She says her family does not want to get caught in a whirlpool of sadness and anger. One man who emotionally told of reconnecting with his father 2 years before the attacks said he can't be vengeful and still have an open heart. Some 9/11 families didn't approve of the decision to testify for Moussaoui. The sister of the pilot of the plane that crashed into the Pentagon said she found it deeply disturbing.
The U.S. government released the first list of detainees held at the Guantanamo Bay prison yesterday. It's the most extensive accounting yet of the hundreds of people held there, nearly all of them labeled enemy combatants. In all, 558 people were named in the list provided by the Pentagon in response to a Freedom of Information lawsuit by the Associated Press. They were among the first swept up in the U.S. global war on terrorism for suspected links to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. The list is the first official roster of Guantanamo detainees who passed through the combatant status review tribunal process in 2004 and 2005 to determine whether they should be deemed enemy combatants. Those named are from Afghanistan, mostly Saudi Arabia, and 39 other countries. Many have been held in the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay for more than 4 years. Only a handful have faced formal charges. Some names are familiar, such as David Hicks, a Muslim from Australia charged with fighting U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan. He's one of 10 detainees selected to be tried by a military tribunal on charges of attempted murder, aiding the enemy, and conspiracy to commit terrorism.
White House political mastermind Karl Rove surrendered a key policy role yesterday, and Press Secretary Scott McClellan resigned in an escalation of a Bush administration shakeup driven by Republican anxieties. Rove gave up his responsibilities as chief policy coordinator, a position he assumed just over a year ago that strengthened his influence over matters ranging from homeland security and domestic policy to the economy and national security. The promotion had left him stretched too thin in the eyes of some officials as the White House grappled with mounting problems. With yesterday's change, Rove will be able to focus more on politics, fundraising, and big picture thinking with the approach of the November congressional elections. The purge also includes Scott McClellan. McClellan, the press secretary for nearly 3 years, was the public face of White House and a vulnerable target in an administration trying to show off new people. He had been bloodied by contentious press briefings and media criticism about an administration loath to give up information. In recent months, McClellan had told people he enjoyed his job and wanted to stay for the long term. He said yesterday he started to think about leaving in the past few weeks and concluded with the new chief of staff that it was a good time to go. He and Bush came to the decision in a meeting Monday in the Oval Office.
A sit-in at Florida Governor Jeb Bush's office stretched into a second day today as about 30 college students protested the state's response to the boot camp beating of a teenager who later died. The students are demanding the arrest of guards who were videotaped beating and kicking 14-year-old Martin Lee Anderson. Bush's office said the governor planned to meet with Anderson's parents today. The students called on Bush to publicly apologize to the boy's parents. They want the governor to release the findings of a second autopsy performed on Anderson and to revoke the license of a medical examiner who performed the first one. In the first autopsy, Dr. Charles Siebert ruled the boy died of complications from sickle cell anemia, a usually benign blood disorder. A second autopsy found that the results of the first were false. Bay County has closed its boot camp, and the House Justice Appropriations Committee wants to replace camps statewide with residential programs. The U.S. Justice Department is also investigating possible civil rights violations in the case.
A man accused of shooting a community activist outside Cincinnati City Hall is now charged with aggravated murder. Howard Beatty faced lesser charges after Michael Bailey was shot in the leg, arm, and chest last Wednesday. Bailey died on Saturday, and yesterday the charge against Beatty was upgraded. Beatty is being held on $1 million bond. Police have said the two men had a long-standing dispute. Bailey had a restraining order against Beatty, but Beatty's lawyer said Bailey threatened his client during or after a local appearance earlier this month, and the shooting was in self-defense after the two met by chance outside City Hall.
Members of Congress occasionally lose elections, but they never lose retirement and health benefits that most Americans can only envy. Congressional pensions tend to be far more generous than those offered in the private sector. Benefits start earlier, and unlike most private pension plans promising a fixed monthly payment based on years worked and pay, these come with annual cost of living increases. They also accrue a third faster than the average plan offered by private companies. Any member of Congress with 5 years of service is eligible for full benefits at 62. Those with 20 years in office can get full benefits at age 50, younger than most workers. It doesn't matter what a lawmaker does before or after leaving office. Former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham, who was sentenced to 8 years and 4 months in jail after pleading guilty to bribery charges this year, is still entitled to an annual pension of about $36,000 for his 15 years in the House. That doesn't include his military pension or 401k benefits. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay will qualify for an initial pension of $56,000. DeLay could get pension payments of nearly $2 million over his expected lifetime.
Minutemen Border Watch leader Chris Simcox has a message for President Bush. Build new security fencing along the border with Mexico or private citizens will. Simcox said yesterday that he's sending an ultimatum to the president through the media, of course. Quote, you can't get through to the president any other way. To deploy military reserves and the National Guard to the Arizona border by May 25th, or, Simcox said, by the Memorial Day weekend, Minutemen Civil Defense Corps volunteers and supporters will break ground to start erecting fencing privately. Simcox said a half dozen landowners along the Arizona-Mexico border have said they will allow fencing to be placed on their borderlands, and others in California, Texas, and New Mexico have agreed to do so as well. But he said the plan is to put up secure fencing that truly will be an effective deterrent and to show how easily it can be accomplished.
Kathleen? Bank is considering returning staff to Iraq almost 3 years after it withdrew from the country. Paul Wolfowitz, World Bank president, said it was looking at whether it was feasible to have personnel on the ground to oversee its activities there. The organization pulled out in August of 2003 after the UN head's office was bombed, and it's been running its Iraqi operations out of neighboring Jordan. It's offered Iraq $500 million in loans, its first support since 1973. The funds requested by the Iraqi authorities are designed to help accelerate existing projects to rebuild Iraq's shattered infrastructure. A World Bank-administered trust is already supporting schemes to train civil servants, rebuild schools, print textbooks, improve health care, and provide access to clean water. This from the BBC.
If Shiites want Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari out of the picture, they now have a way to do it. Al-Jafari has cleared the way for Shiite leaders to withdraw his nomination for a second term. Since Kurdish and Sunni Arab politicians object to him, his removal might be a breakthrough in the months-long effort to form a new Iraqi government. The lawmakers from the seven groups that form the Shiite coalition plan to meet on Saturday to decide whether to replace al-Jafari. One of the lawmakers says they're leaning toward picking somebody new. Parliament is still scheduled to meet today for only the second time since the December election, but only for a short time.
British surgeons yesterday condemned the use of executed prisoners' organs for transplants in China, according to the BBC. They are saying that shortages in the UK were tempting British patients to travel to China despite the grave ethical issues involved. The British Transplantation Society said that an accumulating body of evidence, no pun intended, suggests that the organs of executed prisoners are being removed for transplantation without the prior consent of either the prisoner or their family. Thousands of organs are thought to be involved in the lucrative trade. Transplant centers, patients, and Chinese authorities and judiciary could all be implicated in a breach of human rights. Websites of Chinese transplant centers openly tout in English for business from foreigners. Although they do not suggest the organs come from executed prisoners, they offer a fast supply between a week and a maximum of a month for a kidney transplant. There have been allegations from Falun Gong supporters that members of the banned organization detained in a labor camp near Shenyang, where a transplant center is situated, have been executed to provide organs to order. This from The Guardian.
Beijing's hopes of a smooth summit today between President Hu Jintao and President George W. Bush were undermined yesterday amid new evidence that U.S. internet firms in China cooperated in the crackdown on dissidents. For a section of Congress where there is increasing unease about the growing trade gap in Beijing's human rights record, the discovery of a third instance in which Yahoo released information that led to the jailing of a dissident provides a powerful incentive for Bush to demand concessions from Beijing. In recent months, Congress has been scathing about the business practices in China of U.S. technology and internet firms, accusing Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and Cisco Systems of acting as the willing accomplices to China's secret police in return for access to its markets. The document released yesterday by Reporters Without Borders is likely to fuel those suspicions about doing business in China. It surfaced on a day when Congress was once again conducting hearings on China's human rights record. Reporters Without Borders said the draft email produced yesterday was used at a 2003 trial to sentence a dissident, Zhang Lijun, 39 to 40 years in prison for subversive activities.
A British student who claims he was on a humanitarian mission to Iraq when he was arrested by U.S. forces has been jailed for 15 years for passport violations. Mobeen Munif from Tooting, South London, was sentenced by the Central Criminal Court in Iraq after a trial last week. He was apprehended by U.S. Marines with a group of men in the insurgent stronghold of Ramadi. His family claims he was helping with the humanitarian aid effort, but the U.S. military say gunpowder residues were found on his hands when he was arrested. It's not known exactly what charges were brought against him by the court or on what grounds U.S. forces held him. His lawyers claim he did not have a fair hearing as charges were only brought on April 15th. A spokesman for the Foreign Office said it was continuing to offer Manif consular assistance and legal representation at his trial. This according to The Guardian.
Nepal's royal regime cracked down on protesters yesterday in an attempt to stifle further disruption after 2 weeks of demonstrations aimed at toppling the country's monarch, King Gyanendra. Security forces shot dead at least two people in the southeast of the country and announced a shoot on-site 18-hour curfew in the capital. Yesterday's bloody encounter came in the town of Chandragadi, 300 miles southeast of Kathmandu, where police sprayed demonstrators with bullets. A defense ministry spokesman said two people were killed, although an unofficial UN official said five died.
Nigerian militants in the southern Delta region have rejected plans announced by President Olusegun Obasanjo to develop their region. This according to the BBC. The Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta also renewed its threat to continue oil installation attacks. It said the offer of thousands more jobs and a new motorway did not address their demands for more local control of oil wealth and demilitarization. MEND, or MEND, have kidnapped foreign oil workers and warned them to leave the Delta. In a statement, MEND said the government was trying to remedy 50 years of injustice with the promise of menial jobs. Earlier, Obasanjo told officials from the troubled states that new jobs would be created in the military, police and the state oil company. A statement from MEND sent to Reuters restated a warning to oil companies operating in the Niger Delta and more especially to workers of such companies to leave while they can or halt in attacks was more the tactical suspension which has come to the end.
The president of Kyrgyzstan, Kurmanbek Bakayev, has threatened to close the U.S. military base if Washington does not agree to a steep rise in rent, according to The Guardian. Bakayev said that if the U.S. did not pay more than the current $2 million annual rent for its airfield at Manas, he would terminate the rent agreement, ending the Pentagon's permanent presence in the geopolitical hub of Central Asia. He said negotiations began last July. The U.S. Embassy in the capital, Bishkek, declined to comment. Mr. Bakayev came to power through violent demonstrations that forced out the authoritarian President Askar Akayev.
Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez says his country is withdrawing from the South America trade bloc, the Andean Community of Nations. Chavez told a summit in Paraguay that Venezuela was leaving because recent trade deals between Peru, Colombia, and the U.S. had killed off the community. He has accused fellow members of being overly aligned with the U.S. Chavez has vowed to create economic and political unity in South America without the help of Washington. Chavez has maintained a war of words with Washington and argued that free trade deals are unfair to developing nations. This from the BBC.
Chad's president, Idris Deby, has acknowledged he wants to use oil revenues to pay for weapons to use against rebels. Last week, Chad repelled a rebel attack on the capital in N'Djamena. The World Bank has frozen Chad's oil revenue account, saying President Deby has breached an agreement to reserve some of the money for development. In an interview with a French newspaper, Mr. Deby asked whether the country would not buy arms to defend itself. Deby also said the international community should have taken a stronger line against Sudan, which he blames for the attack on the capital by the United Front for Change rebel group. In another interview with Le Monde newspaper, Mr. Deby blamed the World Bank for his country's economic problems. This from the BBC.
The United States has called on Nicaraguans not to vote for the former leftist leader Daniel Ortega in November's presidential elections. A State Department spokesman said politicians like the Sandinista leader were discredited figures from the country's political past. Ortega's Sandinistas led Nicaragua in the 1980s with strong U.S. opposition. The U.S. controversially helped to arm and train Contra rebels in their war to overthrow the Sandinistas. After nearly 10 years of civil war, Ortega lost the 1990 elections to Violeta Chamorro. In 2002, he ran for office again, but was defeated by the current president, Enrique Bolaños. The Bush administration has in the past accused the Sandinista leader and Mr. Elman of mounting a creeping coup against the Nicaraguan government. The U.S. ambassador in Managua, Paul Trivelli, held talks with the country's main right-wing parties to discuss the possibility of their forming an alliance to oppose Ortega. But correspondents say the U.S. policy could backfire and boost support for the Sandinistas. This from the BBC.
Oil prices again reached record highs, surging above $72 a barrel after official figures revealed a drop in U.S. gasoline supplies. Fears over U.S. stocks added to pressure on prices, recently fueled by U.S.-Iran tensions and Nigerian supply concerns. Global demand for oil remains intense, particularly in the run-up to the U.S. summer holiday season, while available supplies remain tight.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, April 20th, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO's volunteer audio engineers edited the tape. And KBOO's intrepid reporters contributed local stories. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. And she is on the board right now. I'm Chris Andre.
Chavez.
Who doesn't want to get up at 3:30 in the morning to work on the news? Okay, who does? To volunteer, call us at 503-231-8032, extension 202, reach us by email at amnews@kboo, or drop by the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. The KBOO website is www.kboo.fm. We clear the air at 90.7 in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us at 5 p.m. for a solid hour of solid news on the KBOO Evening News. Portland area weather today, sunny most of the day, cloudy over in the afternoon, highs in the 60s to low 70s. Tonight, cloudy, chance of rain, temperatures in the 40s. Coming up this morning on your community radio station, KBOO, at 7:30, Joanne and Dave host Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. Their guest is Jerry Levin, a former CNN Middle East Bureau chief taken hostage in Lebanon in 1984. He now works in Palestine promoting nonviolence and reporting on the Israeli military occupation. At 9, KBOO's own Carlos Chavez hosts Chicanismo. He'll focus on the recent nationwide rallies to support immigrant rights. At 9:30, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, it's a pilot program of anti-war poetry called Roadside Bomb. They'll focus on the parallels between World War I and the Iraq War, as shown through the work of Siegfried Sassoon. And at 10:30, Julie Bernard hosts Art Focus. Her guest is Brian Costello of PICA, the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art. Then join us at 11 for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. This evening at 5 o'clock, KBOO News features Adelante Mujeres, a nonprofit program based in Forest Grove, helping Latinas find a voice in Oregon and the world. At 6 o'clock, a special rebroadcast of the KBOO News investigative report on Oregon's war economy. That's followed by a live call-in about the militarization of our state and local ties to the CIA. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.